morning with the script and a tune called Nothing and Hayley Steinfeld in front of that one. 22 and a half minutes past 8 o'clock on a Wednesday. And Gavin Steinhobel, attorney at law from Kloppers Inc. in the Belita Village, is once again in the house. It's lovely to see you again, Gavin.
Yeah, Dave, it's good to see you as well. I miss you in the mornings these days.
Ah, well, we're never far away.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, Michael's very good on air as well, but I do enjoy your company.
Well, there it is. The feeling is mutual. Now we can go and have a cup of coffee. It's interesting. The world that we share changes literally every 24 hours. There's drama and there's all sorts of excitement that happens. And one wonders, does any of it make any difference at all? Because the bottom line is, things tend to stumble along. Back there was this revelation that was going to shatter the pillars, the tenets of government in South Africa. The president was now going to be called to task to answer for the Pala Pala saga. Now that apparently is still very much ongoing, and it looks as if he is going to be called to answer and at the highest level.
Yeah, well done to the Constitutional Court, which quite obviously isn't captured, and made a very important ruling and said that the decision of Parliament that there was nothing to investigate was irrational, because nobody keeps, you know, $500,000 US dollars in their sofa. You know, first of all, you're not supposed to have foreign currency. You're supposed to bank it immediately and account it through the Reserve Bank. So, first of all, it's obvious that just the very fact that he has the money is a breach of those regulations. Secondly, you know, what sort of human being keeps money stuffed in a sofa if it's legitimate money? Why is it not in the bank? Why is it not declared? You know, where's the income tax on that? I bet if I don't declare a fraction of that, I'll be in the soup. You know, so ultimately, of course, the questions that are raised are manifold. And the Constitutional Court said, well, you know, it's quite obvious that there's definitely indications of malfeasance here, and it should be, because he is the top person in the country and he should lead by example, we should go and investigate this and see if there's any truth to it. First of all, it's very good for him if it's untrue, because then he's exonerated, and it's no good for him if it's true that there's malfeasance here, because and it's good for the country that we find out, because then we know what sort of person leads this country. And that's what we all know in our hearts, but we need to know it as a fact. And so what happens now actually is that the Parliament has to go back, they have to form this committee, and they have to investigate it. So like the other parliamentary commission that's underway, the Mdlanga one, they're going to call the witnesses, Abrams led the charges and so forth, and if they can find the guys who were who were involved and bring them before the parliamentary committee, swear them in, make them state under oath what they know and don't know, and then come to a conclusion, and then you get to take that report to Parliament. Now this is Stalingrad tactics deluxe again.
Well,
because
it doesn't make sense, because if Parliament is holding the commission, creating the report, then taking it back to themselves.
Yes, but remember, okay, first of all, the two parties that took this matter to the Constitutional Court are both in Parliament, and so they will participate in the investigation, and obviously it will be a rocky ride for Cyril, firstly. Secondly, if they do conclude that, you know, that there is malfeasance here and that the president is tainted by it, they can call for an impeachment process. Now, the impeachment process requires a two-thirds majority to impeach and get rid of the president. And, you know, without the ANC involvement, it can't really be reached. But, you know, I don't know, first of all, if Cyril's really got the stomach for the fight, and secondly, whether he really wants this all to be aired. So it might just be, presently he's quite bullish because he's got a couple of, he wants to, obviously oppose the forming of the committee. But once it's formed and once witnesses are brought and they have to start testifying about what happened, and he has to testify himself, I don't think he's really got the stomach for that. So I think my gut feeling is it's the end of the road. It's just a question of, it's like Keir Starmer in the UK. It's the end of the road. It's just, we just got to go through the last of these little motions. And, you know, you said that, you know, it just seems like we bumble along from one thing to another. But I've honestly said for a long time, the change is very much in the air, because the leadership all over the world are totally out of step with the wants and desires and the morality of the people that they lead. And once you have that, there is no future in it. Yes, the arc of justice is long. Yes, these things take time. Yes, they can take lifetimes. But ultimately, things head in the right direction. And I think just the world over, things are heading in the right direction right now. And we're getting to a stage where, you know, behind all the platitudes and the equities and all the arguments, behind all of that lies the fact that things are not working, that people are in charge of things that they can't handle, that they're not qualified to do, and everybody suffers as a result. And so I think, you know, it's like the Emperor's New Clothes story where somebody says, I know, but you can see he's got no clothes on. You know, we need somebody with clothes on. And that's what's happening all around the world. And we're starting to see that people are going, well, you know, these grandiose ideas and this massive social change, and let's not have borders, and let's, you know, let's just throw the baby out with the bathwater. All of that has just delivered dissatisfaction, low economic growth, and people are worse off as a result. And so they're going to vote differently. Yes, it takes time, because you get fooled through a few election cycles by people who are promising change. And then people are also inclined not to want great change, because rapid and fast change can also be disastrous. You can go headlong in the wrong direction. So, you know, it's a process. But at least we live in a democracy, and most people live in democratic countries. Well, probably not most people, but a lot of people do. And that process, yes, it is dirty, and yes, it is tough, and yes, it is fits and starts, but ultimately is better than living in an autocratic situation where you can't affect the outcome.
Ah.
So, you know, you have a look in the UK now, you know, they just had their borough or local elections, and it's gone devastatingly bad for the party that's in charge, the Labour Party. And yes, it doesn't get rid of them, because they're in there for 4 years, but it does undermine their mandate completely, to the point where they probably have a crisis of self-confidence, if they have any conscience at all, which not many politicians do. But anything they say now doesn't come with the heft and the moral weight that it would have if the country was behind you.
Do you get the sense, and I challenge you on this one, because I know that you're rather partial to our friend Donald in America.
BJT.
Yeah. But it would appear that the age of American, the American empire, if you like, is kind of waning. It would appear that way.
No, I disagree with you. I think what's happened is that through a success of weak democratic presidents, America appeared very weak.
Well, the economic growth is very low. It was 2.5%.
Yeah.
I mean, South Africa's economic growth is not far behind. And we said that's terminal. And yet, in the BRICS countries, the bigger BRICS countries, they're 7% and 12%.
But you come off, you know, half a decade of poor leadership, and the next chap jumps in the seat and you go, oh, look at the economic growth isn't very good. Well, they haven't been doing the right things for 5 years. And that's all changing. You know, they're becoming a net exporter of oil. You know, I think, to me, the most miraculous thing, and I really mean this sincerely, is the fact that the Gulf states are all united against a common enemy at the moment. You know, Saudi and the UAE participated in the strikes.
You know, it looks like the common enemy is America, because now all of those countries are being targeted, not by America and Israel.
But I mean, who would have thought that the UAE would have joint strikes against Iran with Israel? You know, who would have thought that would even be possible? You know, the point of the matter is you've got a bad actor that's being taken out, and the Middle East is changing forever. And I think the demise of the Ayatollahs is going to be the beginning of a long period of peace in the Middle East, because they're the sponsors of all the malfeasance there. And I really, really look forward to the end of this war, because I think, you know, the Jerusalem Accords were what a momentous thing to do. After thousands of or hundreds of years of antipathy towards each other, they agreed to recognize each other and to trade and to go forward, you know, as good neighbors rather than antagonistic neighbors. So these are achievements that I think most people are deranged about the man, but these are achievements that are Nobel Prize worthy. And I don't, nobody else, everybody has wanted to try and get this right, and he's got it right, you know, so.
But it doesn't appear to be right. I mean, at the moment, we've got disaster upon disaster. We've got the Indaba Tourism and Trade, the Tourism Expo on at the moment, and apparently tourism across the planet has taken a huge knock since
the Iran war. Well, it's become expensive to fly. It's become. I drove my car to the Transkei and back, and the you know, the fuel bill was staggering. You know, we all experiencing a result of a short term spike in oil. So you know, but the point is, you can't ever, as a species or as an individual or as a household, ever just look at today. You know, you always have to take a long view of things. If you want progress, sometimes you have to put money in the bank now, even though you'd rather buy a new car and save for tomorrow and your retirement one day. And so, and I think, you know, taking out a bad actor like this, and especially one that that you certainly don't want to see ever have nuclear weapons, I think that's an investment in our future. And if one has to pay a short-term price to do that, like all long-term benefits, then we should be paying it. You know, and I think politicians always tend to avoid rolling up their sleeves and creating discord in the short term, and they never, ever will do that. You know, they will never take a short-term hit for a long-term benefit, because they're only around today and they're just trying to get to the next election and win it. You know, politicians are 80% concerned about the next elections and 20% concerned about governing. And that's just a fact. So, you know, here's a man who's taken, you know, grasped the nettle, that made the uncomfortable choices, made the unpopular choices. And I think ultimately, if he succeeds, and there's obviously no guarantee of this, but if he succeeds, I think the world will be a far better place. And I also think politically everybody went mental for a while, and it's good just to return to some kind of sanity, good old values, you know.
Wow. Well, there's the thing. I don't share those sentiments at all. I find Donald and his ilk to be the they are the cause, not the symptom of the drama.
I always wonder with these conversations. It's always sort of very one-sided. It's you know, Donald bad. But nobody ever goes, well, let's have a look at what Iran is and what was happening there and how oppressed the people are and how 40,000 people were mowed down with machine guns for protesting against the regime they do not want. And why should they not have that right? And why should we not come to their aid, you know? Rabbi Sacks was asked in I'm not Jewish, but Rabbi Sacks, the chief rabbi in the UK, was once asked, well, why did God allow the Holocaust? And his answer was, God did not allow the Holocaust. Human beings allowed the Holocaust. Because human beings did nothing. And I think this is also a time where we can't stand by and do nothing. And so, you know, ultimately, I think there's a moral purpose to this. And I think that I can see, and not everybody agrees with me, but I can certainly see a moral good coming out of this, and I can see a different world, and I can see politicians being more accountable. I mean, this is a can-do man. You know, politicians politicians all get voted in, and they do nothing.
But this is a man who is a serial liar. His career is as colorful as they come with regard to his legal challenges, his criminal challenges, his moral challenge. He seems to be, if you look at someone from purely a point of view of what do they stand for, he doesn't stand for the truth, he doesn't stand for fairness.
But your view is entirely shaped by the mainstream media, who've But absolutely done a hatchet job of him for 20 years. They can't write a good thing about him.
Let's just look at one incident.
Okay.
The attempted assassination with a high-powered rifle that whizzed past his head and clipped his ear.
Yeah.
You were in the military. I was in the military. We know what high-powered rifles do, even if they don't have a direct hit. But in this case, it was supposedly a direct hit on the soft flesh of his ear. It would have destroyed a large portion of his ear. There would have been a scar, some kind of scar. Now, it's inconceivable that a man who gets shot in the ear or even clipped on the ear that bleeds profusely and is, you know, there's a big song and dance made of it, but there's no evidence of that gunshot at all. Now,
there were people behind him that were killed.
But I'm talking about his injury.
Yes.
I'm not saying that there weren't people killed. There were. And there continue to be people killed around him left, right, and center.
Yeah, but
wherever he sets his foot, people tend to get killed.
Conspiratorial. I mean,
but it's a fact. Look at him. There is not a mark on his ear. So that then says...
I don't agree with you. I mean, his ear was clearly bleeding.
But there's no scar. Because the media's had a field day zooming in close and showing what damage should have...
I think it's outrageous to say he wasn't shot at. I mean, it hit the person behind him who died. I mean, it would be quite a stunt to put somebody up to wing your ear.
but the evidence there is for all to see. There is no mark on that ear.
But it was an open sights gun, and it wasn't a very good shot. So there we go. He's a very fortunate man.
He's almost able to regenerate bits of him that were missing.
Bit too conspiratorial for my taste, Dave.
All right, let's simply say, look at the results of where the world economy sits today as a result of this ill-advised foray into Iran.
Well, it's not ill-advised, because let's do a counterfactual and say today Iran does have a nuclear weapon. I mean, they're mad enough to use it. That would not be a better world. I don't care what you say. There's no way that that's a better world. I mean, these are the primary sponsors of terrorism throughout the Middle East. Imagine arming them with nuclear weapons, too. That would have been insane. That would have been negligent. And the future generations who would live under that would certainly look back and say, why did nobody do anything?
Well, that's a fair point. But, you know, again, we've been to war. We, as the world, against various actors that have supposedly been conjuring weapons of mass destruction, remember that apocryphal phrase, that were patently untrue.
I agree. I mean, I was never a fan. I mean, I can tell when things are off generally. I mean, I knew that the COVID thing was off. You know, I knew that the vaccine thing was off. I said so at the time, and it turns out I was right, because the messaging didn't make sense, and it seemed like there was just a narrative that was happily adopted, and that'll just justify all ills. And I don't think that at the time the countries involved or the leadership of those countries involved helped themselves, because they did try and pretend that they're not going to cooperate and that they had something to hide. But be that as it may, those are completely different wars. This all started on the 7th of October, and it caused everybody to have a look at what's really going on here. I mean, where Hamas getting their money from? Where's Hezbollah getting their money from? Where's the ANC getting their money from? And, you know, then you start looking, and you know, if you've got a bully in the school ground, and you know, you come back the next semester and there's a bigger kid has arrived at the school and the bully gets put in his place, and that's precisely what's happened here. So I do think it was a necessary to dial back what was happening. I think a lot of lives have been lost. I think a lot of evil has been spread. And I personally think the Gulf states don't want it, and they never wanted it. And I think everybody...
I don't think anyone wanted it.
I think ultimately, if we can get out of this with a changed Iran, or at least an Iran that doesn't have that influence in the Middle East, we will have a better Middle East. And, you know, I see now also the OPEC thing is being split up, so that cartel is also artificially pushing up fuel prices, which will also bring down fuel prices. There's a lot of things going on that tell you that in the future, fuel's going to be a lot cheaper. So,
well, in the future, we'll be driving electric. That's the future, not the internal combustion.
Even that appears not to really be the case. I just see that, who was it? Is it one of the big car manufacturers now completely abandoned their idea of electric vehicles? And, you know, ultimately, you know, everybody, human beings just have this way of falling under the spell of a narrative or of a way of thinking or of a belief system. And, you know, this net zero thing had everybody a bit demented about, you know, just getting into this utopian situation where we just live off solar panels and wind and, you know, and we'd all have electric cars and we wouldn't pollute and nothing would happen to the environment. And ultimately, it wasn't based on sound science, firstly. And secondly, it's not sound economics. And if you can have a look at all the countries that were once economic giants and industrial giants who strove towards net zero, they're all in ruins. Germany, you know, France,
but they're
the
not
UK.
In ruins because of net zero. There are other factors completely.
There are, but I mean, primarily, you cannot compete industrially with the rest of the world if your energy is expensive. And their energy is significantly more expensive. And that's why big companies that have been around for 150 years are closing their doors, because they cannot compete. A big component of your exit price of your goods is the price you pay for energy. And if you're paying more than they are in China or more than they are in India, you're going to lose to them. And you know, all countries need industry because that is the backbone of employing your population. That is the backbone of all the money that goes into universities and all the parents who can afford to send their kids there and all the social services you get. And, you know, if you're going to have artificially high energy, then it's a complete waste of your country's future. And if your idea of net zero is simply to export your manufacture to another country that is burning coal, the net result for the planet is the same. You've achieved absolutely nothing other than throw away the future of your country.
Wow. Strong point to end it on. I must compliment you on your making of strong points this morning. Very, very forthright. I don't think particularly in step with the zeitgeist of the rest of the planet, but very good.
I absolutely love that we disagree, Dave.
Gavin Steinhoffel, attorney at law. You need a good attorney arguing your case or simply doing your property transaction, which he does brilliantly. You want to find him down in the Bolito Village at Kloppers Inc. And Gavin will be back in a week's time on the morning show with Mike. I'm sure he'll be
with
back,
Michael,
I think.
Yes.
Yes. Lovely being with you, Gavin. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dave.
I feel completely put in my place.